Welcome. This is the first debut episode of Rockstar Biography Podcast. I am one of your two co-hosts. My name is Christian Overfield. I'm here with the wonderful and delightful
Martha Guzman.
And we, every week, starting this week, are going to be discussing a different autobiography of some musician who's indelibly made their mark in one way or another. And we are kicking off with, personally, one of my all-time favorites. I think I can say the same thing for my co-host.
Yes.
And we will be reading and discussing Johnny Marr's Set the Boy Free. It was published about four years ago now. And we're here to take you on the journey of our experience as delightful music snobs. what it was like to read the book, whether or not ultimately we recommend that you read it too, but that's for you to decide. So here we go. Let's get started with the first one.
Here we go.
Okay. I feel like we should tell people we did start having read Morrissey's book first.
We did.
Okay. But I really felt like, I don't know, after reading both, somehow I wanted to start with his, and I know you felt the same. Am I incorrect in saying that?
You're not.
Okay.
If it hadn't been for Johnny, there'd be no Smith, there'd be no Morrissey.
There would be, yeah, you and I probably would be talking.
We probably wouldn't be talking.
It's the cause and effect of art, and I really feel that way.
Okay. Absolutely.
So we have not revealed to one another how we feel about this book, okay? I want you to go first, unless you have a preference. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Thumbs up or down, pretty much. I definitely have my opinion. It's very strong. I've been waiting to tell you.
I've been waiting to tell you what I thought about it.
Okay. All right. Well, go right ahead.
I loved it.
Okay.
I absolutely loved it.
Okay.
From the first page to the very last page, I loved it.
And why is that?
And I have to tell you, I was actually very surprised by that. I didn't think I was going to like it quite as much as I did. My expectations were actually pretty low, I have to admit.
Why is that?
I don't know. I didn't expect to enjoy it quite as much as I did. It resonated with me in so many ways at a very personal level. There was just so much about it that I related to. His upbringing, even though I'm not Irish.
Okay.
His upbringing, there was just so much. And I don't know.
Guzman's not Irish?
Guzman is not Irish, actually. It's not, I know.
I'm so confused.
I know.
I don't even know you.
I know.
Who you are. All right, keep going.
And, you know, just his upbringing, having grown up with lots of music in his house. That's how I grew up. There was always music playing. His Catholic upbringing. I grew up Catholic. And there was just so much of that. The way he described his sister really stood out to me because my brother has described me the same way, as funny and sweet, but you don't mess around with her. And then I thought, wait, is this sort of like a generic description that all brothers use for their little sisters? Like, wait, is that?
It could be. I don't have any siblings. I know.
But I felt there was so much heart to his story as well. And I was moved by it.
Okay.
I mean, there were moments where I actually teared up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Okay. Where did you tear up?
I teared up in the parts.
I feel like you should tell Art. Hold on. I feel like you should share with people that tearing up is not something you.
It's not. It's actually so.
It's not. Okay.
I didn't expect to be moved by it. I didn't have really high expectations about it before I started reading it. But nonetheless, yes, I teared up when he talked about the Smiths, when he talked about his relationship with Morrissey. I felt that there was a lot of love there. I felt that, and everything that he said, I don't know, it just moved me. There was just so many parts of it, you know, like the beginning of their friendship and all the commonalities that they had. And then, you know, when Morrissey sends him the tape, that mixtape that just arrives at his door with all of these songs that they both liked. And there was something very romantic about that in a sort of non-romantic kind of way. I don't know. I really liked it. And with the breakup, even though I completely understood why he would have been so over the band and just want to be done with it, it still made me so sad. And I think in part it was because I remembered when the band broke up back in the day.
You remember. You were
I
a
remember.
Fan of,
I was already a fan. Yes.
Wow, you're ahead of me. Okay.
I was already a fan. And I remember when Strange Ways to Recome was released. And there was
You
a
remember
lot of,
that?
I do remember that.
Oh,
and there,
wow.
And there was a lot of ambivalence as to whether or not the band had actually split up or not, because here they were releasing a new album, but there were all these rumors about the band having broken up. And I remember feeling so sad about the breakup then, because in just the short time that I had been listening to them, they'd already become such an important part of my life. I mean, I loved and still love the Smiths so much. And I remember feeling so sad, thinking, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? Like, this music really speaks to me. Am I never going to hear anything from anyone, you know, Morrissey or Johnny again? And so reading his take on that and sort of him narrating all of that, it kind of brought all of those feelings back to me. So it really resonated with me. And I have to say, I got a little teary-eyed and emotional because I know.
You know what? You should rate your books in terms of tiers. Like, this is a 5-tier. This is a 4-tier.
I should. This is when we should start rating these books.
This is a 7 Kleenex. You know, the Kleenex fluid release, you know, means different things to different people. But in your case, it's purely emotional.
It's purely emotional.
So this is like five tiers were like the maximum quantity.
Absolutely. I liked it. Okay. Five tiers. But you know what, though? It doesn't mean that I don't have my criticisms. I do have some as well.
Okay.
I felt that there were some moments where he just kind of glazed over some of the stories and he didn't really get into it. I felt like he always tried to keep sort of a very cheerful and happy. And I kept thinking, oh, come on, even the nicest person has their moments. Like, get angry, Johnny. Come on, give us a little bit of dirt.
Okay.
And he never really did. I also loved reading about his relationship with Matt Johnson.
Right.
That was.
Okay. So let's stick with the Smiths a little bit before we go. Okay. So I feel like the book had three parts to it. There's like his upbringing. Then there's the Smiths, which what I really liked about what he did is he devoted a proportionate amount of time to the Smiths, to the biography.
Yes.
It's like he knows why you're buying the book. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we've already read the Morrissey book, and without, you know, trying to get into that, I did like that he acknowledged why we're reading the book. Okay. And why we even know the name Johnny Marr, and he spends time doing that. He doesn't apologize or shy away from that subject. He's just forthcoming about it, its proportion. And then like the final third of the book, though, is just this collection of chapters. Each one is like a vignette of then I played with this band, then I played with that band, then I played with that band, then I played with that band. So the three parts to it. So I kind of want to stick with the Smiths before we just go all over the place. Okay. Because I haven't told you how I felt about the book.
Yeah, tell me.
I'm gonna do that. So I've had it on my shelf for 2 years. Even though I'm I had the poster on my wall, okay? And he was, in a sense, I always thought he was sort of the underdog of the group, because Morrissey was like the hood ornament of the band. Everybody rallied. I mean, I loved Morrissey. I spent $200 to have my haircut like his when I went to Beverly Hills, okay? But I just, if you can't quickly glom on to Johnny Marr as like the end of the yang, right? Into the emotional music tapestry of it. So huge, just Mondo Johnny Marr fan. I bought a Rickenbacker because of Johnny Marr. It's Bacher, actually. I even went to Hollywood Boulevard. They had like, it took me 6 months to find a t-shirt that said Johnny Marr, right? It takes me 10 seconds to find one that says Morrissey, right? So I was a huge Johnny Marr fan. Okay, but lately, right? Okay, so this is how I'm approaching the book. It's been on my shelf for 2 years, obviously unread, okay? I hate the title, Set the Boy Free. Okay. Couldn't stand it.
Yeah, I never understood that either. As
I don't know what it means. He never tells you.
No, okay? He doesn't.
He doesn't tell you at all. And I have, in the past couple of years, you know, you and I, me more than you, I've made fun of Johnny Marr's career. His horrible titles, like Call the Comet, right? I don't know what that means. It's painful. Okay. His self-seriousness lately, I guess. It's like late in the day, he's decided, hey, I'm going to be a rock star called Johnny Marr. You know, and it kind of rubs me the wrong way, because you're already a rock star, dude. You know what I mean? You don't have to put on a special haircut. You've already got one. You're amazing. Okay. So on top of that, right, I also made the mistake of reading some Amazon reviews. is. Okay. All right. And some people just eviscerate them and they say, oh my God, it's like a simpleton wrote this book. So going into it, don't like the title, right? I can't stand his late career is just bizarre, even though the music's great. It's just the titles are terrible. His lyrics are just awful. That's what I think, I'm just to be honest with you. And I read these Amazon reviews. But and then it gets like page 15 when he's talking about his family history. Do you remember that paragraph when he talks? He enumerates every single family member.
Yes.
Okay, and it's like, oh my God, it's that chapter of the Bible where, you know, Bob beget, Tony beget. And I thought, oh no, it's really going to be that book. But after that, I ultimately had the same reaction you did, which is I just flat out loved it. I thought he just was unashamed and unapologetic about loving his band and sharing his enthusiasm for it all. And he just comes across like a really warm guy.
He does. Yeah. He really does.
Yeah. He really does.
That's what I liked about it too. And I thought, oh my gosh, I could be friends with Johnny. I really like him. He seems like a nice guy.
I think like he definitely was the McCartney of the band. He's the one you go to if you don't want to deal with the acid of Lennon, which is obviously Morrissey.
Right.
So that's, but I just, I, what I really liked, it's hard not to talk about this in correlation with the Morrissey book, okay? But I'm going to try not to because we're saving that for the next
one. Yeah, and it's difficult not to.
It is. But I really, there was a moment in the book when I realized I just love this. Because if you're a Smiths fan, and you and I, are obviously we picked this book as the starting point, okay? So we're more than, if you're a Smiths fan, you're not just a fan, you're almost a cultic member. You can't just sort of casually like the band. You either go all in or you don't, right?
Absolutely.
So that's how, as I'm reading the book, he's the only person that has the power to let us into the relationship that relationship is what we're listening to if you listen to the Smiths. You're listening to the sound of his relationship with Morrissey. And only he and Morrissey are the people who have the ability to take us into the room when they were working on songs together. And okay, so without giving it away completely, I'm just going to say I was dissatisfied with Morrissey's attempts or lack of to do that. And Johnny
Marr, his book.
Exactly.
So was
but
I.
Johnny Marr, though, he lets you in. And there is that moment when he's talking about the band, when they're first coalescing and gelling together in the upper floors of that rented flat.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, and I really, for one second, felt like I was in that room.
Yes, so did I.
And that was priceless because that's what I wanted. I wanted just a moment to feel like I was a fly on the wall with these kids. And before Morrissey became, you know, Morrissey, before any of them became anything. And he brought you into that room for just a second. And was worth the price of the whole book to me.
And that is something that Morrissey, again, with not going into too much detail about Morrissey's book, that's something that Morrissey never quite does in his book.
Yeah, I got a lot to say about that.
Oh, yeah. You both. But with Johnny's book, you really felt sort of the connection between the two of them. I mean, I loved the part, you know, where he just, again, I mean, I'm going for the emotional stuff, right?
So okay.
Where he talks about sort of how much he loved him.
Right.
And he says, you know, I loved him. We were as close as anyone could be without being
without
physical.
A physical relationship.
And I thought, oh my gosh, he really, truly, like, that just encapsulated everything I needed to know about the way he felt for him.
Yeah.
And I thought, you never got that, you know, again, you never really get that with Morrissey's book. And and it just, and I think that's the reason that I got as emotional as I did when the split happens, because I thought, it wasn't just a band, you know,
it was a breakup.
It was more than that. And I think that they both realized that, you know, when he talks about them reuniting years later in that club, and that they both sort of acknowledge the fact that they're both equally as important to one another in their life story. Because without one, you wouldn't have had the other. And I don't know, even that scene, you know, or that moment when he talks about that, I kept thinking, my gosh, you know, there was real love between these two guys. And it was, and it's sad to me that it can no longer be, that it can no longer, that they can no longer perform together, even if it was just a one-off, you know, because I don't know, I think that the magic that would ensue from something like that would just be so spectacular. And of course, for us fans, we would just all just go berserk, you know, but would it even be the same? I mean, would, you know, there's, I don't know, it just, it's just so sad to me, all of it, you know, it's very sad.
Yeah, the whole, yeah. So obviously the music itself is, it's just sad. There's no way around it.
Okay? Oh, yeah.
He puts it, and like, he's honest about that. He's like, you know, he was initially irritated that people attributed the word miserable to their music. But then he says, well, I can't complain if the lyrics themselves are called Miserable Lie and the song titles have all these words. Like, how can I complain that that's the tag associated with the band? Because that's... it just fused into their music. Okay. But on top of that, it's just sad the way the whole thing breaks up and falls apart. But okay. But however, all right. So I felt like, all right, he does bring you in. Okay. And it could just be in contrast to Morrissey's, you really felt like you're let in. But by the same token, so I was skimming it again today. Right. And then I don't know about you, but you know, that section when Johnny Marr himself describes taking his friend Pommy, or what's his face, over to Morrissey's house and knocking on the door. I mean, we've all heard that story. I swear it's like part of legend now, you know.
Right.
I mean, one half of this amazing songwriting team, success literally knocks on your door and says, here I am. And to hear Johnny Marr describe how it happened was, yeah, I'm sure like you, you're like, this is the meat. This is why, yes, I bought the book, and thank you for giving it to me.
Yes.
Okay. However, at the very, when the Smiths are, he talks about Strange Ways, right? We're going now to the end of the Smiths' mm-hmm. career. Okay. And he begins by saying, I've read this before, that the recording of that album was a really happy time.
Yeah.
Which is hard to quite fathom based on what we're reading, but everyone has said that. He's not the only person to say it. And then he just sort of casually alludes that halfway during the recording, things sort of go sour and that the band members sort of start creating new alliances. All right, do you remember that?
Yes.
Well, he doesn't tell you what that is, what that looks like, what that means. And then he cuts to the, like, I think a day later, a week later, doesn't matter. Morrissey's pulled one of his, I'm just not showing up things, okay?
Yes.
And he poignantly writes that I'm now driving to my songwriting partner's house again, just like I did in the beginning, but this time he won't answer the door.
Yes. Oh, right? That just,
I know.
Oh, that
I know.
Just did me in when he
me
wrote,
too.
When I read that. It just did me in when I read that.
Did for me too. It was really, because you're really, he's the only verbal member of that relationship that's letting you in at all.
Right.
But I don't even, okay, but here's my thing though. I don't know really how, compared to what, you know, what the other half offers, it just seems like a ton of information. But if you think about it, he doesn't tell you what's really happening. Morrissey says, I just want things to be the way they were, but you really don't know what that means. And Johnny Marr admits to the depth of the relationship you and I imagined they had. He admits to that being real, but I wish he'd shown us more, because he's the only person from whom we're ever going to get that. And he doesn't.
Well, yes, but he does allude to it though. Remember, it's because once they get that new manager, and apparently Morrissey didn't care too much for him. And so much of that ended up happening as it seems like that caused friction. And Johnny was just tired of managing the band and managing everything else. And it seems like it was when that one manager is brought in that Morrissey just flat out doesn't like, and he is just unwilling to work with him. And Johnny mentions how he was just fed up with having to do everything in addition to the music, having to manage things and having to worry about all the legal things and all of that.
Right.
And it seems like the other band members, you know, the impression that I got was that Morrissey got Mike and Andy sort of rattled up against Johnny, you know, because when they have that final meeting, when the four of them are sitting and I thought to myself, God, what a jerk. You know, it seems,
I thought
that was not, that wasn't very nice.
Yeah.
That was not cool.
And you know what?
Yeah.
It's not a coincidence that at that final meeting, somehow apparently Mike Joyce becomes a spokesperson. Could you believe that?
I know, right? The irony, wow. The irony in all of this.
Well, that's a foreshadowing.
Seriously,
Mike Joyce.
Seriously. Yeah. That's what I thought. I thought to myself, wow, yeah. Look who delivers the news, you know? Oh,
right.
My gosh.
Oh, wow. I know. It's like, boy, this Mike Joyce has a consistent, ongoing habit of being who he
yes,
is.
Yes, he does. He really does.
So to go, I took that away, what you're saying about, okay, so I want to backtrack a little bit. Now, short, the queen is dead. And I really, really did understand that Johnny Marr is clearly as equal an artist at the minimum, as Morrissey is. Except he's not given the shield and protection that Morrissey has. And that shield and protection is Johnny Marr.
Yes.
Yeah. So Johnny Marr. Yeah. And Johnny Marr is like, so apparently, let me get this straight. I'm just as much of an artist as you are. And I'm protecting you because you're fragile, Morrissey. But I'm an artist too, and no one's protecting me. I have to answer all these phone calls from lawyers,
yes,
from managers, and I'm trying to bring my own majesty to this. And I really, he successfully conveyed that frustration to me.
Oh my gosh, I was over it. I was just so done when he kept talking about all of that. I thought, why was he coddled so much? Why did everyone around him just coddle him? And I thought, you know what? I don't blame Johnny for being done and just saying, you know what? I'm out of here. I would have done the same thing.
Yeah.
And in fact, I probably would have done it even before then. I think he probably even waited too long to finally quit. He had so much on him that no one else had to worry about, in particular Morrissey.
Nobody.
because
right.
Like you said, he was protected from by everyone, and I'm thinking,
right,
what made him so special? I mean, you know, I didn't understand that. And sure, they were all special in their own way, but he just was coddled throughout, and I thought, no, that wasn't fair. And Johnny was younger, which is the irony in all of this too.
Yeah, I know.
He was the younger one.
Please tell the audience, in case they don't know, how young Johnny Marr was when he starts one of the greatest bands of all time.
Gosh, how old was he? Like 17 or 18
years
old?
He was 19
years
old.
Yeah.
He completed a complete body of work that I could spend 100 lifetimes trying to achieve and not get remotely close by the time he was 24 years old. I remember when I first kind of did the math on how young he was during this list.
Right.
And I've told a variety of people that. And no one seems to be sort of as impressed as I am by the scope of that achievement. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I was 24 years old, I was a non-functioning individual.
Well, I was functioning, unlike you, Christian. I was a functioning individual.
Okay.
But
well,
I didn't
really? Let's hear your five albums, okay? Let's hear them all. I want to hear all like 72 songs you casually composed.
Well, this is a secret you don't know about me. I actually had a secret band back then that I never shared. Yeah,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I did.
I see. You've just been successfully coddled in
such a
way that it hasn't had to break up yet.
Never. It never has. It's a secret band. I'll share the music with you one day.
Well, okay. Maybe you're a little more functioning than the rest of us are, but I mean, can you wrap your head around the scope of starting a band?
It's incredible. It's incredible.
It's just too much. And you start to think that's part and parcel of his talent, of some kind of forward-thinking, just visionary. I don't know. I mean,
he had a lot of drive. He had a lot of drive, and he had a lot of determination, and he was just determined to succeed, and he was determined to have a band that was going to be successful, and he made it work. He went and he looked for all of these people. He was just determined, you know?
Okay.
And so,
man, so I could talk about this forever in this relationship. Because
I could too.
I mean, their relationship really is representative of just honestly so many couples' relationships. So I don't want to leave it yet because it's, I mean, if you're a Smiths fan, that's what you're listening to every time you play their music. I'm listening to the relationship of two people and how they felt about one another and what that sounded like. So I want to go back to what you said about him being mollycoddled, because starting from the age of like, I don't know, 17 or 18, when I started reading about the Smiths, I'd read those stories about Morrissey not showing up to this, to that, to everything else.
Well, he still doesn't. He still doesn't. Yeah.
Okay, but here's my thing, though. Here's my thing. And I feel like, and again, we might be going into Morrissey's a little bit, or maybe the nature of relationships. I feel like Morrissey's response to Johnny Marr, or the part of Johnny Marr that can't complain, is you knew who I was when you met me.
Right.
This is, I might be a difficult, weird, delicate bird that is exhausting to deal with, but you knew that when you met me. And so I'm having to guess, because neither, well, I'll just say Johnny Marr doesn't let us in. That's when Morrissey says, I want to go back to how it was. It's like, that's how we met. That's how the music began. It began with this unspoken relationship of you and me and this dynamic.
Yes.
And Johnny Marr, I guess it's like any relationship. As Johnny Marr is like, I still love these things about you, but boy, these negatives are starting to outweigh. And do you know what?
Well, he was just tired. He was just tired of having to take care of all of it. And and I don't blame him. And I think you're absolutely right, because that's the way that I interpreted it as well. I felt like Morrissey just wanted Johnny to continue taking care of everything. And within that everything, it was him too.
Right.
And not have this other person come in. And the way that I read that when he's so against this new manager was, I don't want to have to deal with him. I want it to still just be Johnny.
Yes, yes.
That's exactly
what You know what? I think those managers were like, Johnny Marr's like, we need to go to marriage counseling, dude. and Morrissey's like, I'm not doing that. Things are fine. You love me the way you do.
I'm not changing. Right.
This is how it is. That's what he says. I won't share you. It's got to be on my terms.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's
what the lyrics to me have always meant is, I love you too much to share you with these lame bands you want to go join.
You know what? I know you've said this to me, that's what you felt that song was about. You've said this to me before.
Yeah.
And I never, I wondered about that, but I always interpreted it a little bit different. But now having read this book, having read Johnny's book, that song is totally about Johnny. I am convinced 1000% that song is about Johnny.
Oh, yeah.
And now absolutely. I think I'm going to have to listen to their entire catalog all over again after having read both of these books. And I think I'm going to read or listen to the songs very differently. And I think I'm going to interpret them.
Yeah. Oh, you should trust me. Differently. I won't share you. Mike Joyce himself says that he can't listen to that song. And for some whatever reason, he has apparently a jukebox that's worth a ton of money, costs a ton of money, because he can afford that because he stole from his two partners, right? But it comes on all the time, and he says he can't listen to it, because it's just too painful. And obviously, that's what the song's about. It's like,
yeah, clearly,
yeah, Morrison's saying this is my time, and you're my boyfriend. Quite frankly, I'm not going to share you. And you know what's interesting?
Do you think he was in love with him? Do you think
that's like a 1,000-hour discussion. But in a very simple, of course they loved one another.
No, they did.
Of course they did.
But do you think it was like a romantic love that he felt for him?
No, I think it was a little more.
A little bit more than a friendship love?
I think it took on a romantic, think about it. This person is literally my savior. I'm a tortured artist with no outlet. And suddenly my hero knocks on my door and says, I have come to rescue you, Rapunzel. Think about it. You can finally express yourself against the backdrop of all of this beautiful music. And you get to be the delicate little flower.
Oh my gosh. No wonder he was so upset, huh?
Sure. Absolutely.
I wonder what people listening think. I'd like to pose this question to our listeners.
I think everybody feels, how could they not? And I've also heard somebody give me their theory about, I know it's over.
Oh, let me say something about that song, if I may, please.
Sure, go ahead.
That is my favorite song ever. No, listen, right, listen.
How many tears?
many, all frankly. Right. Okay. That song is my absolute, not just Smith's favorite song, it is my absolute favorite song ever by anyone.
By anyone ever.
Okay. That is my favorite song. Yes.
All right.
I love that song. You.
Obviously, there's a reason we started with Johnny Marr. We're both in agreement. That's like top three. Honestly, I can't listen to it that often. It's so heavy. But I got to tell you real quick, quickly, an interpretation somebody gave to me is that song was recorded around the time, that Johnny Marr got married. And somebody has intuited that that's Morrissey's letter to Johnny Marr, that I know my hope with you.
Whoa.
Yes, I know it's over. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I've never heard this before.
It's
never.
Very powerful if you think about it.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to have to listen to it like right now.
I know. It takes on new meaning. Everything does. And that's why the Smiths are so, you know, look, we could fangush about it forever, but I just want to say one last thing about Johnny Marr's age. I was like 17 years old the first time I heard "Last Night I Dreamt That Somebody Loved Me."
Oh, that's another great one.
It's not even a sufficient. I mean, I don't know if words are, that's why it's music. Words are no longer sufficient. Like this artistry called music is. And to think that some 23-year-old kid is putting that soundscape together is it's just astonishing to me. Anyway, like I said, we can gush about it forever. But I want to, real quick, so I think Morrissey turned out to be the loyalist. Like, I want to be the, if you think about it. So we've talked about the Smith, and we could talk about that forever, right?
Forever. Hours and hours.
Think about what's interesting about, okay, Johnny Marr is, when I discovered that he had been married to the same woman forever.
You didn't know that?
Well, no, I knew that, but I've known that for about, you know, some time now, but that's kind of taken on a weird psychological thing with me after reading this book.
What do you mean?
Okay. I'll tell you what, it means a lot of things to me. He's oddly loyal to his wife, which is, I mean, first of all, just in life.
As it should be.
I get that, by the way, to somebody who's been married 19 times like I have, okay? It's like weird to me. I know you and Nick are just like cruising through life. That's awesome, okay? But Johnny Marr's fidelity to his wife is very unique in the annals of like rock and roll history. It's very odd, okay?
That is true. And they've been together since they were 15 years old.
I know, it's mind-boggling. I have such a crush on her, by the way. She's so hot. She really is.
She's cute.
So beautiful. It's interesting about him. It's like his static foundation is his relationship with his wife. And yet he seems to not at all be monogamous with his musical partners. I don't know about you, but this like the final third of the book, he just hops in bed with every band that comes across.
Yes.
He's like open-minded in that sense.
But I think that's great. That's what keeps his artistry alive.
Well, okay. I agree with that. Obviously, Johnny Marr is like this. I'm sure you came to the conclusion that I did. His house is like a revolving door of musicians.
Oh, I couldn't handle that. I thought to myself, my gosh, his wife is a saint. I could not have people in and out of my house all the time, every day, day and night.
I don't think he could have that world exist if he didn't have that sort of bedrock foundation.
Correct.
What do I know?
No, but it's true.
Okay.
It's true.
But moving on, it started to get weird. Okay, so the Smiths are over now. It's terrible. And then he begins, like I said, hopping in bed with all these different bands. And it got, I don't know, I sort of started to get a weird... Okay, so I've lost track. You know, there's the Talking Heads to Billy Bragg, and I don't know why he's proud of that song. It's the worst song ever.
That song is
of all time.
Awful, awful, awful.
Okay.
The Pretenders. Pretenders.
And
Electronic.
By the way, okay, so real quick. Hopefully you felt the same way about, there's certain moments where I really got a sense of just how talented this guy is. And reminded of like, oh, this is why I'm reading a book written by this guy, because not everyone has a talent like this. So apparently he just casually learns how to play every Pretender song.
I know. Right? When I read that, I thought, are you kidding me? Did you seriously?
Right.
And it was in like a super short span of time.
Like
and I'm
two
thinking,
days.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I'm thinking,
it totally is.
Like, who does that? I mean, who can do
right.
that?
What 24-year-old
child oh my gosh.
Can show up with the chops and the attitude to go, yeah, I can do this. I've learned all of these songs.
All of them.
This whole band is watching to see if I can do it. Because, by the way, I think the tour starts in 2 days.
Yes. Well, that was it. That's what blew me away, because the tour was going to start soon after. And he had to learn the music in like a super short span of time. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me right now with this?
Nope.
Yeah, I was blown away by that. I was totally blown away by that.
Nope. Yes, it's like, that's when I realized, God, this. And so, God, there's just, I could talk about this book forever. I mean, this
yeah,
forever.
So could I. It was really great.
And to tie into what I started talking about at the beginning about his new, like, I'm Johnny Marr, this is my haircut, this is my album. It's like, dude, please stop doing that. When you were only 24 years old, everybody on the planet stood up to take note of who you are. I mean, Chrissy Hynde is calling you. David Byrne is calling
you. I know.
Paul McCartney, Keith Richards are calling you and saying, come to my house. I want to knight you. You are part of our tribe. Truly, it's like you are you. And you know what's interesting? Check this out. It just occurred to me. I don't remember any of those people calling up Morrissey saying, hey, let's jam. They called up Johnny Marr and said, that guy, that's the one. I want to play with that guy. And that those moments, I think he inadvertently, without trying, gives away how talented he is. It's that all of these people from all these walks of life who are legends are like, I want to play with that kid, that scrappy, like 3 foot tall British dude. But it doesn't matter. I think of Johnny Marr is like this elf of awesome.
elf
of awesome. He's like this like spryly, like diminutive dude who just happens to unleash these entire universes of music.
I have to say, you know that you and I have made fun lately of certain things that he's done and like his albums. Right. You more than me, because I'm nicer than you are.
But
I have to say, after having read this book, I truly gained a lot of respect for him. I mean, I've always had a respect.
Yeah,
I've always had respect for him, clearly. But I really gained a lot of respect for him. I saw him in a very different light than I'd seen him in before, too. And again, I mean, I've always respected him for all the work that he's done with some of the bands that he's played with. You know, I mean, all of that, clearly. But I just thought, you know, he is just a super talented guy.
Yeah.
And he has a good heart and
with a great attitude.
A great attitude. Yeah. And I thought to myself, I mean, I wish he would have. Again, even nice people, you know, have their moments. And I wish he would have dished a little bit, and maybe, you know, the cynic in me would have wished that he would have just talked a little bit of smack about some of the people he's worked with. And he never does, which is fine.
He never does.
Not even about Morrissey.
Not even about Mike Joyce.
Yes, not even about Mike.
Yeah.
I mean, not even about Mike.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. Who took lots of money from him. And he just kind of said, he just kind of blows it off like, okay, whatever. I just wanted to keep making music. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, like,
that's amazing.
I probably would have written, you know, a paragraph about how pissed off I was about that. But
yeah, I would have.
Yeah, but he doesn't, you know? And I thought, okay, that's, I don't know. That's cool. You know, that
actually
kind of goes along with everything. It just doesn't.
The degree to which he didn't ever do that, to me, revealed also something about him. And he glosses over it like, well, I'm just sort of glad it was over.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just glad, you know, I just wanted to make another record with Bernard.
Yes.
Anyway.
Because that's exactly what he says. He's like, I was just glad it was over, and I wanted to get back in the recording studio and make more music.
Like, wow.
And I'm thinking, wow, you're a much better person than I am.
either you are not sincere, and that's a skill. It works for you. Or you were really on another Zen level, because I can't give away $300 without it, you know, affecting me. And he just casually is like, yeah, you know, it's just sort of glad it's behind me.
Same. I don't like giving my money away.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
I mean,
let's face it. Who does? But yeah, he was very cavalier about the whole thing. Like, whatever. It's not a big deal. And then I thought to myself, well, how much money do you actually have, Johnny, that you just didn't even, that you were so unfazed by having to give? You know, because Morrissey won't stop talking about it to this day.
I know. I can't wait.
Oh, I can't wait for us to talk about that.
Okay, wait, real quick. So I want to go back to, I've always been fascinated, and Johnny Marr alludes to it. No one is ever really as satisfactory, and Johnny Marr doesn't. He's very careful. No one's established ever whether or not Morrissey came up with the melody to all of those Smith songs. Johnny Marr carefully, I quoted him, Johnny Marr says, well, Morrissey came up with the lyrics or his vocal lines, but I'm still in the clouds a little bit. And I still think this is Morrissey's genius that no one will talk about, is that Johnny Marr comes up with the tapestry, the backdrop, but the one thing he can't do is do that that phrasing, that melodic artistry. And I feel like the way he kind of, throughout the book, his book, he shies away from saying, look, Morrissey sang this.
Right.
He came up with those little melody lines and everything. He doesn't do that. And I feel like the fact that he avoids saying that means that Morrissey did do that.
Well, I believe I've read in interviews with Morrissey that he, in fact, came up with those.
I'm like 95% certain.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the fact that, yeah, Johnny won't go, it's like, why won't you give that up? I mean, dude, you're Johnny Marr. How much credit do you need? You know what I mean? You're Johnny Marr. Do you not get that? I don't understand.
I know.
So I want to, there are, what were your, I have a okay. So the things that work about the book is Johnny is like willing to tell you, I understand why you bought the book. Let me tell you about those things, right? But that personality also kind of gets in the way a little bit. So here's my criticism of the book. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I could talk all day about the weirdness of, you know, here's where I'm in Modest Mouse, and it's the greatest band that ever lived. And then I break up with that band, and now I'm in this new band called The Cribs, the greatest band that ever lived. And I don't know, I felt like a father listening to my daughter say, here's my latest husband. Isn't he awesome? I'm like, yeah, I got on board with the first husband, but by now you're on. I thought that part got weird for me. Okay, so it just got weird. I don't know. I had a weird feeling that he expected all of us to be as enamored with every new band he decided to join.
It's I think it's because he's so passionate about every project that he takes
maybe,
on.
Maybe.
So he wants all of us to, I think, feel just as passionately about them. But
maybe,
frankly,
okay,
that's just not the case.
All right, so here's my...
Except with the...
Yes. Oh, God, we could talk about that one.
Well, we need honestly, to talk about that. Because
that's just
you know,
a whole separate subject matter.
Because
yeah.
You know...
Yes.
How I feel about
yes.
Matt Johnson. And
I do. I enjoyed reading it. All right, here's the thing about biographies in general, or autobiographies, because that's all we do.
Yes, that's all we do.
That's all we do.
Show.
All right, I think it's going to be, it's backwards revisionist. That might be like a double negative. History telling. So I'll give you an example. So he talks in the book about the Moore's murders. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the second I read that, he takes a detour to talk about the Moore's murders. Like, oh, I just remember, you know, this is like a big deal casually. It's like affected everybody. And I was very cynical when I read that. You're just, hello, your band just happened to write a song about that. And you're artificially inserting this part here of Johnny Marr taking a particular interest in it. And I felt the same way about, you know, I'm going to tell you a disproportionate amount of time about how I came up with How Soon Is Now. And it's like history has obviously, better or worse, picked certain Smith songs as being canonical. How Soon Is Now, you know.
Right.
This light. And he, of course, I guess I'm being sort of a hypocrite. I'm glad that he spends, you know, a proportionate amount of time talking about the Smiths, but... By the same token, he's very artful. But I think that Marr, you know, really Marr was that he does demonstrate a social skill of giving the public what they want. Oh, let me tell you how I wrote How Soon Is Now. That's the one they play all the time.
Right.
Let me tell you how I came up with This Charming Man. That's, you know, and I feel like he does pander. So,
and you know, Morrissey has said that about him too.
Yeah, and so that's why, again, the relationship works so well. Morrissey's like, I just do what I want to do. In a sense, that's much more punk than anyway, we could talk about that.
Yes, we could.
But so I guess my criticism of Johnny Marr's book is just that it's not a critic. It's just his personality. I mean, I'm faulting him for being...
Who he is.
Yeah, who he is. And so he's... Sometimes I want to... I'm like, really? You're going to tell me how you wrote How Soon Is Now? I believe it or not, I've read the Wikipedia article. How about you tell me something different? You know what I mean? Tell me something different. Tell me...
We all know how you wrote that song, Johnny.
Exactly. That's like asking Paul... It's like if Paul McCartney spent an hour talking about how he wrote Yesterday. It's like, you're not really going to do that right now, are you? I mean, it's in like Encyclopedia Britannica at this point. What I mean is, I want to know something that only you know, because you are Johnny Marr in the room.
Right.
And so anyway, I want to keep talking about part three.
I want to talk about Dada.
Okay.
We need to talk about Dada.
No, let's take a detour into part three of all the bands and stuff. Go ahead.
I really enjoyed reading all of that.
Okay.
Because as you know, I am a huge, huge fan of Matt Johnson.
You are?
Music. And you realize that that's how we became friends, Christian.
Do you like Dada?
No, we became friends because of our appreciation of Dada. You remember that? You remember that?
I know. I remember. You first brought in help. I'm blanking. I'm so
It was. I forget the song. In one of our classes.
I got it. Slow emotional
replay. Slow emotion replay. One of our classes. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
But I loved reading about that. And, you know, it was interesting for me to find out that he'd known Matt for as long as he had. I mean, they met when they were kids. That was interesting. I never knew that.
I don't know about you, but so I've read enough about like The Cure and The Smiths, and there are definitely, I've heard it said, there are definitely moments in time where it's like a creative wave, the ebb and the flow.
Right.
But Manchester at that time.
My gosh, right?
Oh my God. I love how he casually says, yeah, before I got to Morrissey, I was considering Ian McCulloch from Ian.
Yes. Oh my gosh. He said that, I thought, what are you talking about? You mean that could have been a whole other band? Are you kidding me? Oh my gosh. Yes.
Manchester. I mean, the takeaway from Marr's book and others is how fertile that Manchester
scene was. It was amazing.
It really was.
Oh, you know, another thing too was I was really surprised to hear that. I mean, I don't know if I should have been as surprised as I was, but it just, when they opened for Sisters of Mercy, I'm like, what? I couldn't even, I'm like, this is open for Sisters of Mercy.
Right.
And of course, right after I read that, I had to go on YouTube and like watch all these Sisters of Mercy videos. And I'm just thinking, I don't even see the connection there, but I kind of guess I do. I don't know. But that was interesting to me to see that, or to learn that they'd open for them. But going back to the you know, those albums are just great. Mind Bomb and Dusk. Mind Bomb is probably one of my favorite albums of all time. It's not probably. It is one of my favorite albums. Yes. Top 10.
Favorites. You've listed your greatest song of all time. And now you've reserved top 10 of all time.
Mind Bomb is one of them. Top 10 albums of all time.
I say Dusk. We'll
Dusk
disagree.
Is great. No,
we're
Dusk
splitting
is,
hairs.
No, Dusk is great too. But for me, Mind Bomb just... It's perfection from beginning to end. I absolutely love that album. And I was actually very excited when Johnny joined Dada.
Well, he joined every band. He's like,
Dada in particular, because I'd always been such a fan of Dada. So when he joined, I was very excited about that. And that album is just so great. And with Dusk, the one, again, going back to the emotions, because I'm the sensitive one of the two.
That hurts my feelings, ironically. Okay.
But
believe it or not.
When he said that when they were recording, would you say you're an only child?
No, keep going.
when he said that when they recorded Love is Stronger Than Death, and that he was crying as he was playing the harmonica.
Yeah,
I want to tell you a story about that
song.
Did
you cry?
No, but I'll tell you a story about that.
Okay.
When soon after that, right before that song was released, because you know, that was like the first single from Dusk, I believe.
Right, I remember.
And right before that was released, one of my uncles passed away.
Okay.
And I was unable to listen to that song. I would always skip over it. When I bought the album, because I just could not listen to it. Every time that I attempted to, I can't. I mean, the lyrics to that song are just so beautiful. The music is just so, so beautiful and melancholic and lovely. And it was probably a year after that album was released that I could actually listen to it in its entirety, because I always had to skip over that song. And there are times, even now, when it just reminds me when my uncle passed away. And so I always, so when I read that, it really moved me because I thought, oh my gosh, that song had a similar significance to me when it came out. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's a great album though, but that is a great album.
So you mentioned lyrics, okay,
yes.
For that song. All right. So I thought it was very generous of Johnny. He takes a whole page of his book to share the lyrics of, what's his name's? I don't know. The modest mouth lead Brockman. What's his name?
Oh, I
whatever.
He
gives up a page of his, and he just shows you the lyrics of that song, which were, by the way, I'm assuming you've heard that song. It's a great album.
Yes.
Modest. Okay.
Yes.
That song
I've seen Modest Mouse live.
That song is a 10.
Yeah, it's a good song.
Yeah, the lyrics of that are gorgeous on print. But so I thought it was generous of Johnny to say, look how beautiful these words are. But simultaneously, he also shares his own lyrics later on. I think he talks about, okay, all right, so here's where Johnny goes awry, okay? He shares his lyrics, mistake, they're horrible, okay? He goes awry. There are two moments in the book where, okay, here's my complaint with Johnny Marr. Okay.
Okay.
It's not a complaint I've realized. I feel like this is his insecurity. I think he worries that people don't think he's the smart one. Because there's a digression in his book where he talks
to that. He alludes to that. Yeah, he kind of says that. Yeah.
I guess so, but it's like you can say that, but then he takes a digression into his favorite literature. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it's like don't do that.
Just, yeah.
I'm embarrassed for you. And then worse than that, I swear, like the final third of the book, there's a whole portion where he discusses his favorite philosophers.
Yes.
And I just thought, dude, no, you're not making friends with this. They're brief, they're minor, and again, these are quibbles.
They are.
But because don't get me wrong, you know, I would just love to spend some time with Johnny, and he seems like a great guy with a great attitude.
You've met him. Tell us about that.
I have. I don't think that'd be that interesting. I did wait in line. Oh. And the book that I read was signed copy, it's hardcover. I met him
nice.
At a book signing. Okay, and if you know what's pathetic about my meeting him, I'm like everybody else in the world. So I'm sure most people, when they think, oh my God, I'm about to meet this person that made a big difference in my life, right?
Right.
They rack their brains for like, I need to be special. You know, like, I got to say something that's like, you know, just like totally unique. So remember me, right?
I would say like the lamest thing, knowing me, I'd be what's your favorite ice cream flavor?
I should have. I should have just said like hamburgers or pizza. I got to know.
Right? He's a vegan. Yeah. So definitely. Veggie burger.
Right. Blondes or brunettes. You're like, you know.
Clearly
like,
brunette. His wife is a brunette.
And it goes, sweet. So I was so pretentious. I was like, you know, I really enjoyed how you recorded with Edmund Collins. You know.
And
I think he misheard me, but it was exciting. You know, when you meet your idols, it's, you don't, what I had like 30 seconds with the guy. It's not enough time. I mean, you and I have talked about Johnny for like 70 minutes now.
We have.
Yeah, and I can keep going. So imagine how much time I'd need to sit down with the guy before
forever.
Forever. Yeah. So those are my kind of quibbles. Random things. I didn't know how deep his relationship with Andy Rourke was.
Yeah, neither did I.
Yeah,
that one's really deep.
It was. It also enriched. First of all, I think Andy Rourke is like one of the most underrated bassists ever of all time. But it enriched for me him as a person. And it also singles Andy Rourke out, I think, at the end of the book.
Despite the
fact that I swear Andy Rourke, he testified for Mike Joyce.
I know,
right?
And he still acknowledged him.
He still acknowledged Andy. Yeah,
I know.
It's like, wow.
I was really surprised by that, actually.
I was too.
In fact,
I think the closest we'll ever get to a Johnny Marr bitch slap is he doesn't thank Mike Joyce at the end of the book. He's like, you know what, dude? I don't have hard feelings against anybody, but I'm not going to thank you. at the
Well,
end of
how
my,
could you? You have to have some dignity. I mean, how
I
could
guess a little
you?
bit,
A
I
little
guess.
bit, just a little.
Oh man.
So we loved
So
it. We loved
I
the book.
did. I
Yeah,
did. I was
I did too.
surprised.
I was too.
I was surprised.
I was too.
I don't know what that says about my attitude or me or stuff, or maybe Johnny Marr, honestly, who he's sort of become in the past. You know, I mean, he's in control of his image. I mean, there's a portion of the book where he talks about how he took the, you know, I took the picture of the cover of my album. You know, I felt I was on like a, I was balancing on. Do you remember
Yes,
that? I was like, oh my God, dude, that's the most pretentious, awful thing you've ever said. So did I. And by the way, it's the lamest cover to an album of all
Yes,
time.
and
This
he's
is
giving
why
it, and he's giving it so much meaning, and I'm just
it
like,
really is.
like, stop, just
It's sad.
stop.
It's sad. It's like, this is where you need an editor. You know, this is oof, oof.
Yeah,
Oh.
that really, I thought, are we really doing this? Are
Yeah,
we?
you really are.
You know what's really interesting though? When I saw him at the Fonda about 7 years ago,
Okay, I saw him too. Go on.
and you know, I thought, I mean, I feel like I had to go see him just
Oh, yeah.
because, you know, I
Oh,
had
yeah.
to, you
Oh,
know?
yeah. He's Johnny
And
Marr.
so we, you know, I went and I saw him, and I have to say, when he played Smith's songs, again, it just made me feel so sad about the fact that we will probably never see those two together on stage.
I hope not.
Because the music sounded so great, and you've seen Morrissey too, obviously.
Yes,
And
I have.
when he plays, when he sings more, you know, Smith songs, the music sounds, I mean, sounds good, but it doesn't sound the way it sounds when Johnny plays those songs, you know? And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, it's like the music is there, you know? It's
Yeah,
just,
it's there.
it's there. I mean, just,
Well, I'm gonna tell our fans, you know,
our
the
fans,
I think we're up to like we're up to like
a million
it's
people
a lot.
listening, a million.
I'm not gonna tell you because I think you'd choke in the moment, you
Oh my
know.
gosh.
It's don't look down, just don't
Oh,
look down.
I
Look.
won't.
You have been much more honestly, I don't have the same reaction to Johnny's singing of the Smith songs as you do. So I don't really care when he sings. It's not, you know, make or break. When he sings his own songs, it's just flat. But
Yeah,
I will
I
say,
mm.
I'm going to take a page from your tier, you know, your tier scale.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to share this with you and our 382,000 listeners right now.
Millions, you mean?
Exactly.
Okay.
I saw Johnny Marr play at the House of Blues in I think it's Anaheim, right?
Oh,
Which is
wow, that's very intimate.
It is. It's also like the most anti-Smiths place. I mean, Orange
Yes.
County and the Smiths.
Yeah,
Oh my God.
yeah, yeah.
I felt like, you know, somebody should have pulled him aside and said, by the way, you know,
You're in the wrong place.
Orange County, you don't want to bring the Smiths here. By the way, Irvine Meadows is like the most anti-Smiths. I
It
couldn't
is.
believe the Smiths place there.
Yes, they
Anyway,
did.
I had had maybe a couple of Jack and Diets
Just a
while I was,
couple.
yeah, and when I saw Johnny play Please Please, you know,
Oh, did you cry?
I actually, yes, an actual real tear.
Oh, I
I
like that
think, you know,
story. I
if
like
you're
that
like
story.
me, I think if you the times in life where you have to force yourself to, it's like I forcibly resurrected my 16-year-old to say, hey, 16-year-old kid, 30 years in your, well, it was like 25, 25 years in your future, you're seeing that man you love like
Aww.
so much. You're seeing him play those chords. The guy himself is like playing those chords. You're in the room with him. It's like you have to force yourself. I did. It's like
Yes.
forcibly. And I did that. And I, you know, I was moved. It's like, God, I'm in the room with this guy,
Yes.
the person who gave me so much happiness is
Oh,
in
I
the
love
room with me
that.
right now.
That's
And
how I
yeah.
felt the first time I saw Morrissey live. Like,
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
cried. I could not contain myself. I just could not believe that I was sharing the same space
Yeah.
with someone who I'd listened to every single day from the time I was around 12 years old
yeah.
till about 25. You know, I mean,
yeah.
it's something. It's powerful.
It's like, honestly, I feel like sometimes in that moment, the senses aren't capable of, because I mean, this years of accumulated listening and love. And how do you pack it all in into the 1 hour you have,
yes.
you know, sharing the space with them?
Yes. And then for that hour, you're sharing the same space, the same
yeah.
air,
yeah.
the same everything, that
the
energy.
Same. Yeah.
And it's almost, I don't know, it's almost unbelievable. And you just can't, I don't know. And you know, the first time I saw Morrissey, I was very close to the stage. And I was just absolutely and completely mesmerized. And I just could not believe it. I just could not believe it. It was great. It was great.
So everybody listening, I would like to be, I'm definitely Ebert. I want to be Ebert. You can be Siskel.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
I was really, I'm glad that you and I decided to start reading these books together, because honestly, I got to say, I don't know that I would have, as much as I love Johnny Martin's, I had just, the way I was feeling about, I guess, his latest persona, I don't think I ever would have read it. Well, I can't say that, but I certainly, it wasn't on the radar, and I'm really glad I did.
You know, same here. I don't think I would have read it otherwise if we hadn't started doing this.
Right.
I would not have read it. And I'm so glad I did, because I got an insight into who he is that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Right.
Insight into the Smiths that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise. So, I'm glad we did too.
To all Johnny Marr fans in the world.
Each and every one of you.
Martha and I can safely tell you the best way to meet him is to go for a 20-mile jog around, right? Apparently, Johnny Marr casually runs 25 miles before every concert he performs.
Oh, my gosh.
So, if you want to meet Johnny Marr.
And I thought I was a rock star with my family.
Right.
And I'm
thinking,
oh, my God.
This guy took it
to another
level.
3-4 miles a day? Are you kidding me? This is nothing. You put me to shame. Oh, a whole other level.
And
he was messing around.
Right. Actually, I did feel like a contagious passion for his running. I mean, I did...
Are you going to take up running now?
Negative. Never will I do that. In fact, I'm only going to run alongside Johnny Marr to tell him to start drinking again so we can hang out and have a good time.
Stop.
Right.
Stop with the healthy.
Right. And stop. Yeah. Just like quit. Thank you so much, Martha. You brought your wonderful insights and tears, your copious tears.
My copious tears. Hey, you brought some too, though.
Copious tears is the
you
name.
Brought,
of my...
You brought a few tears to this episode as well.
Yeah, I want everybody.
I love that you got in touch with your sensitive side, Christian.
Yeah, copious tears is going to be the name of my band, Johnny Marr.
Oh,
and
that's amazing. I love
Final tidbit. I'm sure Martha will be also like excited I shared this.
Oh.
If for some reason you can't read Johnny Marr's book for whatever, you don't read it, you're not a reader, but apparently the Smiths could have been named the Walking Wounded.
Oh,
which
yes.
is like the worst name of all time. So Morrissey's not perfect, everybody. And we should ultimately thank Johnny Marr for being the good editor that he is and saying, yeah, I don't think so. Let's go with...
But he did say, but Morrissey did say that that's the name he wanted to.
Yes.
So,
well,
with that, we end our first episode. Stay tuned or join us next time for.
And by the way, I think, what's his name? His name is, I forgot it.
Who?
Oh, Morrissey.
Oh, yeah.
Morrissey. As we dive into, we've already read it. I'm chomping the bit.
Yes, and as am I. Definitely.
Yes, as we take a deep dive into the Moz, second half of the Hall & Oates relationship that was dismissed.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.